Looking for hope? House of Possibilities offers children and adults with disabilities a path to greater independence. From social to recreational programs to overnight respite and career and community access opportunities, House of Possibilities is changing the way people see disabilities and their program participants see themselves. Visit houseofpossibilities.org to learn more or to support their work. That's houseofpossibilities.org. House of Possibilities. See what belonging can do.
B-Pod Studios.
This is WWE Superstar Roman Reigns, and you are listening to Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast with James Stewart and Mike Riley, two great members of the Kowloon crew. Mike, remember, this is Jay Stu's yard, brother.
Hi, everybody. Joe Murray from Over Under 98.5 and the Just Sitting Here podcast joins me this week on our silly little wrestling podcast, Wrestling Inside the Ropes. Michael will be back next week when we do a deep dive into The Undertaker's career in WWE. And that's where I want to start this week, Joe Murray. You watched Undertaker Last Ride docuseries on WWE Network. I liked the series. I'll detail that why in a moment. What'd you think of the series, Joe?
I thought it was really well done. Every single episode I thought got better and better. I think the first two were really good. Four, you started to see, okay, maybe there's some sort of ending coming here. I didn't expect what we saw in episode five, which we'll get into in a little bit here, but there were some details in there, that I thought I took away at least was that, you know, he was always the Undertaker. He was never Mark Calloway. He was kayfabe, you know, he stayed in character his whole entire career. And towards the end, you could see the respect that was out there. You could see the relationship that was with, that he had with Vince McMahon. And I thought that really stood out. But just a couple of notes though. You know, he mentioned Kobe Bryant's death at the end. And, you know, one of the shots he took when he's taking his tape off was Kobe. Like, he had that connection with other superior athletes. You know, we know about the Bill Goldberg botch with his neck. You know, we know about what happened with the Boneyard match, the fact that he lost his brother, and the fact that they're bringing out caskets and things to that degree. His wife, Michelle's, I believe, nephew died. This was all during the pandemic around WrestleMania. And he realized he had nothing else to prove. Now, he did leave that door open like Michael Jordan did years ago. Could there be one more match? Overall, I thought they did a great job. They explained why they did the Boneyard match. The Holy Trinity of Mark Calloway, the old Undertaker, and the American Badass. I thought they did that well. And thinking back on it, Jay Stu, I love the Boneyard match now. And I watched it again this week when it was on SmackDown. This might have been one of their best documentaries that they've had. And they had a little bit of an announcement at the end of it as well.
So I love the series. There were details in it that I didn't know either, but I had suspicions of. The Brock Lesnar going to the hospital with Undertaker after New Orleans was one of those. The title of the documentary kind of gave away what the ending was. Undertaker's Last Ride, it kind of felt that way. So it didn't surprise me that without saying it, but saying it, that Taker's done. He never said the word retired. And he always left the door open for, you know, break glass in case Undertaker is needed, which sounds silly. But the details in it, and there's a note, and I don't remember. I remember it at the time, but Taker's retired like 17 times, and nobody's known it. He retired in Dallas at WrestleMania 32 after beating Shane McMahon, where he just left his gloves in the ring and he told everybody he was done. And that seemed to be a continuous theory, a continuous story throughout the series, is that like he's done here. No, he thinks he's got a little bit left. He's chasing this moment that he may never find because he's an athlete, and we've been around enough athletes where we know that some of them, it's never good enough for them. So they keep going and going and going until they finally hit it. And as you talked about, the personal life experiences, I think, made it like, okay, it's time to move on a little bit. So I think that if we do see Undertaker again, it'll be at WrestleMania. It'll be a Hall of Fame weekend, but I'm not even so sure of that, which leads me. So Lance Storm actually had a great tweet where he says WrestleMania, the closing of WrestleMania should be the Undertaker's entrance and do something similar to what happened in Orlando against Roman Reigns at WrestleMania 33. Undertaker entrance, leaves his hat and all his stuff in the ring, and that's his goodbye. Because the entrance, you can't screw up unless he trips and falls, which he won't because he goes at such a methodical pace. So whereas, and this is the conversation point that I want to ask you, Undertaker's got a 15-year contract. So if Vince breaks glass and calls the Undertaker, who's the opponent? And does beating the Undertaker still have value? And I'm not so sure that it does, because if it had value, AJ would have lost, right? But you're not going to have Undertaker's match, which is a graveyard match called a boneyard match, but it's the same thing. You're not going to have Undertaker lose his gimmick match in his last match or what could be his last match. So Joe Murray, who potentially is the last Undertaker opponent, if it's not AJ Styles, which seems perfect, and does beating the Undertaker still have value?
I'll answer the question. I believe beating the Undertaker still has value. Like, remember when they ribbed AJ Styles saying, yeah, there's some kid in Tennessee that we want to put over, kind of pissed him off, and then, you know, he came back.
Yeah.
But, you know, one thing that we got during Money in the Bank was, like, that AJ Styles thing is still there. You know, he got locked in the room, saw the Undertaker's photo. You know, he just got traded to SmackDown. Now, like, we'll see what happens, but I feel like there was something there. It's cooled off a little bit, but there was something there. Brock Lesnar could still be something. Hey, maybe he wants to get back that streak. I don't know if he physically could. The other one is this, and we might see something coming up with the Braun Strowman Bray Wyatt swamp fight that's happening, but
non-title, you know, swamp fight, by the way.
Good point. Could we see another Bray Wyatt Undertaker match that is somewhat done like a movie? I think it could help the Undertaker, but it could also help Bray Wyatt, right? Now he's starting, you know, I mentioned the Holy Trinity of the Undertaker. We're starting to see a Holy Trinity of Bray Wyatt at this point, right?
So he's got multiple faces. He's got more faces than Mick Foley does.
So maybe we get that in some sort of, you know, cinematography type setting, but it puts up that ghoul who always will call out the Undertaker. And maybe to your point, Undertaker comes to the ring, does, you know, his thing. And maybe he's the American Bad, or maybe he's just Mark Calloway. I don't know. But Bray Wyatt is the other name. I mentioned Brock just because maybe they're friends and they're still there.
Oh, they see. I mean, if Brock Lesnar is going to the hospital with Undertaker after he concussed him at WrestleMania, like, they're friends.
But to your point, you know, is there value in it? Who would have value? And I'll just give Bray Wyatt, I think, is a guy who does.
So if they did Bray Wyatt, they would do The Fiend. They would probably do the Firefly Funhouse, maybe similar to Cena. And that's the whole, did the match actually happen? Was it in John Cena's head? Was it in Bray Wyatt's head? There's layers to question whether John Cena actually lost a match at WrestleMania and Bray Wyatt won, or I guess that's kind of the whole point, is we don't know what we saw. But we think we saw Bray Wyatt beating John Cena, which is a very big and important win for Bray Wyatt, the Fiend, especially coming off of losing to Goldberg and sandbagging Goldberg in the Saudi show where he lost the Universal Championship. So the Fiend could have value in the transformation of the Undertaker's power, but I would say WrestleMania 31 should have been that type of match where Bray Wyatt beats the Undertaker. So maybe there's value there. I don't necessarily think that there is.
Anyone else you think? Yep, Sting. You
said? There's Sting, because everybody's wanted to see it. The Sting Undertaker match. Sting's beaten up. Sting's retired. Is there a Boneyard match or a Scorpion's Devils match or something like that? Is there another mini movie that they can produce where they can do Sting and Undertaker? Undertaker has to win that one. So there's no value there. Baron Corbin on SmackDown cuts a promo mocking The Undertaker. Could Baron Corbin adding The Undertaker to his I've now retired people list? Because Baron Corbin, there's an argument he's the best villain in wrestling. Yep. And he's the villain that the fans seem to just dislike and they don't know what to do with, because he's a traditional like boo wrestling villain, as opposed to the cool, like, okay, you're cool, we're gonna kind of cheer you and buy your merch. And Baron Corbin's not that at all. He's legitimately the I hate you wrestling villain. So Baron Corbin's a potential answer, but I mean, Baron Corbin's gonna bump for 10 minutes and then cheat to win. And I don't think that does anything, because then if that's a bad match, Undertaker has to come back again. So the name that I think might have value is Drew McIntyre. He's the champion. He's somebody who I know that they had plans for an Undertaker Drew McIntyre match. And so coming off of this AJ Styles Boneyard match, Undertaker, they do the program where Undertaker's like, I got one left in me and I want the title. I want to see if I can win the title one more time. And if I don't, then it's my farewell match. And Drew beats him, and Drew gets to say he beat the Undertaker in his last match. You may end up turning Drew McIntyre into a villain, but that might not necessarily be the worst thing in the world. Joe, your thoughts on Sting, Corbin, Drew McIntyre?
Sting, I think that could be like a, all right, Undertaker, you guys can go home and we'll do some sort of like cinema, you know, thing. Corbin, I could see something like similar to the Elias. Hey, the next guy who interrupts me, you know, comes in, does a choke slam, walks out, gets the pop. Like, I think the fans at some point, right? That's probably one just big takeaway from the Undertaker's retirement, is that the fans never got their send off. So maybe just a quick choke slam to Baron Corbin. Maybe he leaves his stuff in the ring, like you said. That could be a goodbye Taker moment. The Drew McIntyre Taker thing, I think Drew could handle that as the top guy, meaning taking the bumps and doing most of the work there. I think that's something that could be there. While we've been talking, I've just been thinking about some other names. You know, we never really got Seth versus Taker, really. We know Roman did. I'm just trying to think of some others.
They probably had a match, and it was a random Raw. It was a house show. It was something like that. I feel like, because I remember the triple team powerbomb, the Shield triple team powerbomb on a Raw or SmackDown on Undertaker. Yeah. So I'm sure that Taker and Rollins have had some sort of singles interaction before, just not in a featured program.
And I'm just curious too, is Edge someone that might want to go down there? The Rated R Superstars coming back. Could there be something there? But again, is there value in that fight? I don't know.
I don't see value in it, because they've already had and they're not going to top the programs that they've already had. Mm. And they main evented a WrestleMania and a SummerSlam. That's one of the lost items of the Ric Flair, Shawn Michaels retirement night. Edge and Undertaker main evented that WrestleMania and had a hell of a match.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's all I have. I mean, maybe a listener will chat in after the show or whatever, but I want to see at least one more time for a goodbye. I don't need it to be a finish. I want to just see him, fans in the stands, say your goodbye, move on, go to the Hall of Fame.
And the finish for the McIntyre thing could be a double turn. They go into it as two good guys. Undertaker's just getting the best of Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre cheats and wins. And there's your villain. And now the chase is on for somebody on the good side of things to beat Drew McIntyre. And that gives him a little bit of steam on the other side of things.
One more name, only because I saw it discussed and he was on the documentary a ton. Shane McMahon. I don't know what the angle would be, but to get one more of those crazy, maybe off a cage type final moment there, there could be something to it.
the match in Dallas was painful. It was 30-ish minutes, and we're just waiting for Shane to dive off the cell and an Undertaker win, yeah, because it's WrestleMania and Undertaker's not losing to Shane McMahon. Career versus it was Undertaker's career at WrestleMania versus Shane McMahon can't be the general manager of Raw or SmackDown, but yet he comes out and he's announced as the general manager of SmackDown or Raw or something. It was a hodgepodge stipulation. It didn't mean anything. But Shane versus Undertaker at WrestleMania 32 wasn't great. But I think that was our own fault as fans, because we were anticipating Shane just diving off the cell. And so we got that. We went ooh and nod, and then Undertaker won, and that was the match. And it was 30 minutes. So I think that's what that is. Joe, I know in our notes you had some questions. One was, as we mentioned, Braun Strowman versus Bray Wyatt, non-title, is going to be a swamp match. And your question in our back and forth was, what should we expect the swamp match to be? Another theater match? And yeah, it's going to be something like the Sister Abigail match, I think, where Randy Orton burned down Bray Wyatt's house. Should have been arrested for arson, but wasn't. It's non-title, which is interesting since they just did Velveteen Dream and Adam Cole, yeah, in a cinematic match where the title was on the line. But that indicates to me that they don't want Braun Strowman to lose the Universal Championship yet.
Yeah, my only thing with this is, like, I think Bray Wyatt's over with the crowd, right? He clearly, the guy can wrestle. He's a good character. His gimmick's outstanding. He can win. He can lose. He doesn't need the title, all that. So he's the perfect character for what WWE wants on a consistent basis. But he's not on television as much as you might want. My only thing is, they put the title on Braun Strowman. Is there anybody at all that can compete with Strowman? Is there anyone? Now, we keep seeing, oh, the whole Wyatt family is going to be there in the swamp match. I just don't know where we see some sort of weakness for Braun Strowman. That's my only thing going into the match. So how will they do the match? Maybe it's somewhere in Florida. They get a swamp. Maybe they have, lanterns, and maybe they bring in those characters that are part of the funhouse. I don't know. My only thing is this. Do you think that Braun Strowman will lose this match whatsoever? And it's no to me. It's just no. And I feel like, and I'll get your opinion on it in a second, but it's always going to be, oh, I'm going to haunt Braun Strowman, but I just never see him losing.
So because it's non-title, I think Bray Wyatt wins. I'd be shocked. I'd be shocked. And then with Strowman, who beats Strowman? Well, a lot of people have beaten Strowman in the past. So how they get the title off him, you can figure that out. I think that Brock Lesnar is coming back before SummerSlam, and he's going to have a match either against McIntyre or Strowman at SummerSlam, which might be at an arena in Lakeland, Florida. Supposedly WWE has a hold on a couple dates down there. So if Boston falls through, they're going to do it in Florida with fans, which is fascinating to me, since they just had their COVID outbreak, which, we'll get to in a little bit, maybe. But the other thing is, you could have Seth Rollins beat Braun Strowman. You can move Seth Rollins right over there, because Seth has beaten Braun Strowman. He won the Royal Rumble. And I think he won a championship fight. I feel like it was like four curb stomps and a pedigree beat Strowman once. I feel like that happened.
I believe that did too, yeah.
So there are ways to beat Braun Strowman.
Seth did at Clash of Champions. You're right, like the curb stomp there. While we're on it, yes, this was in the notes as well, and we're probably going to touch on everything today, but
yeah.
Where are they going with the Monday Night Messiah, in your opinion? And I Mike Riley, who is normally on this broadcast, he's out with Seth Rollins. He's always been out. My whole thing with Rollins, and I have too been out, but he's achieved everything he possibly could, right? Whenever they ask him to answer the bell, he does. This Monday Night Messiah thing, I don't get it. I don't understand it. Maybe there's a third, that there's rumors there might be a third partner that's going to join him. But I think he could fail this one, Jimmy. I think this could be the one where They have no storyline here with the Monday Night Messiah. The Rey Mysterio thing, it's getting old. It's getting boring. I hope Bruce Pritchard's trying to change it up a little bit now that he's taken over, but this might be the first time we see the Monday Night Messiah fail.
So I've liked some of the Seth Rollins promos. I think the idea with Seth Rollins is he's coming off of a seemingly failed run as good guy Universal Champion. So you make him a bad guy. You make him do the I'm better than everybody else. I'm a god in the wrestling world, which he was at one point the favored son of the internet wrestling community. And then he won the main event against Brock Lesnar. And then that's when everything kind of fell apart for him. And so I think the idea here was Seth is going to lead a group and it's going to try to get the younger talent over. Buddy Murphy, AOP, Austin Theory. And I think that was kind of the goal of, I think that was more or less the goal of the Monday Night Messiah. And unfortunately, like AOP failed. So that's not Seth Rollins' fault. That's the fact that they're bad talents. So Austin Theory might have his own issues right now. So he's going to fail. And Buddy Murphy is kind of, I mean, he was the tag team champion and that didn't really work out. So we'll see.
And that, my only, like I said, he's answered the bell, right? He's answered everything. Anything you've asked for the guy. I'm just curious where it goes with him. And I don't know. When, at the end of the Raw, when I know it's them, it's just, I feel like it's the same thing every week. And maybe it will be the same thing this week. I'm Mysterio and his kid and Buddy Murphy. And somehow Aleister Black gets in the mix of it as well.
So, Joe, you mentioned Aleister Black and the fact that Bruce Pritchard is now leading the Raw team. And the first night of Bruce leading the Raw team, it was, I don't know, was there 30 minutes of matches in 3 hours? I think the longest match might have been 10 minutes. Because what WWE seems to be doing now is they're doing promo-heavy content. Because Paul Heyman and doing these longer matches wasn't working. And there's a whole podcast to be done on the pluses and minuses of Paul Heyman. But Bruce is going to come in and he's going to let wrestlers talk, superstars talk, and we'll see where that goes. And I think the last 2 weeks of ratings have been better. But Paul Heyman, for all of his good, his 18-month plan only lasted 10 months. So now you're going to get more promos. You're going to get more cross-pollination of stories. And we'll see where it goes. But Buddy Murphy, Aleister Black, Apollo Crews.
Yeah, he's getting the point.
You know, we're going to see who the Bruce Pritchard guys are as opposed to the Paul Heyman guys, because Paul's just going to be managing Brock from now on.
Yeah, I like, what I like is they're giving Bobby Lashley a push. Like, that's a guy that needs it. I think MVP on his side is doing a good job. You mix R-Truth in the mix. You mentioned the Apollo Crews angle in there. I like all of that, but I guess I haven't looked at it like that. And that's why this is Wrestling Inside the Ropes, right? You look at it differently. I have been watching more. I've been more intent on watching Raw of late, and SmackDown for that matter. So maybe I am getting more promos, more storylines, more buildup to make it more interesting to watch those shorter matches. So good point on that one. And I did like the Dolph Ziggler, Drew McIntyre angle. They announced the trade that AJ left, but like those two guys started together and here they are going to fight at Extreme Rules.
Well, and that's the thing too, with like, I'm a big fan of Dolph Ziggler. I think he's a talent. He's one of the best in-ring performers. And there was a point in time where he connected with the audience. The audience was into him. That cash in that he had the night after WrestleMania in 28 was Miami, 29 was New York. The night after where he cashes in, that was one of the biggest ovations. He cashes on Alberto Del Rio. And that's one of the biggest pops for a cash in that there has been. So Dolph Ziggler at one point had value, but whoever makes the decisions doesn't see Dolph as the world champion. They see him as the guy who helps make the world champion look good. And I think that's why he's in this match. That's why he was in a program with Kofi, because Dolph sells his ass off and Dolph does what is asked of him. But you know what wouldn't surprise me, Joe? Because on Raw, they put Drew McIntyre and R-Truth as a team, and the WWE title was on the line. Dolph might win, because Bruce Pritchard has this, you listen to Something to Wrestle all the time,
oh, yeah.
And Bruce always has this thing of nobody can call it. So if you're looking at it on paper, can Dolph Ziggler beat Drew McIntyre? Everybody says no, because Dolph hasn't been put in the position of being a legitimate challenger, a legitimate world title threat. Dolph might pull an upset here. I don't think he will, but who's out there calling Dolph Ziggler upsetting Drew McIntyre? Nobody.
Good point. They have a couple of weeks to build it. Just to transition quickly, you mentioned the ratings.
Yep.
And we've been pretty WWE heavy here, but AEW, man, I watch it. That's what I watch on Wednesday nights.
Sure.
And I go back and I watch NXT taped. I just like the live event of AEW. Why, in your opinion, do you think the ratings have failed or have been lower the last couple of weeks?
I think it has a lot to do with the off-screen wrestling stuff that's going on. And that's COVID-19. That's the speaking out movement. I think it's also we're into the summer months and where we still have 40 million people who are receiving unemployment benefits who are probably eating dinner with their family at 5 or 6 o'clock and they're going to bed at 8 or they're reading to their kids at 8 or they're doing something that doesn't have them in front of the TV. So that's where I would say that those ratings are going. The misnomer of this past week is NXT won the ratings. They won the ratings because the 50 plus audience just blew everything out of the water. The 18 to 49 ratings, AEW won across the board.
Oh.
I think the big upset for the AEW ratings is the Jericho Orange Cassidy at the ending the show. That was a ratings loss for them. They lost to the triple threat main event of Finn Balor, Keith Lee, Johnny Gargano.
Yeah.
So that's more of the exceptions because Orange Cassidy has been a strong ratings draw for AEW over the course of everything. So you match him up with Chris Jericho, and that should be a ratings win, and it wasn't. But that also proves that people are invested in seeing this title for title fight and Keith Lee being a star and going and being, you know, Keith Lee two belts potentially. Because that match with Adam Cole is a winner take all match. So I don't think that they'll do a funky ending to it. You're either going to have Adam Cole with two titles or you're going to have Keith Lee with two titles. And, you know, I think Keith Lee's going to get both belts.
Hey, just getting back to the COVID-19 thing. Just, you know, Roman Reigns, Sami Zayn publicly came out and, you know, I guess we understand Roman's reasons. You know, his wife had a baby and he also has his whole
twins. He's got five kids.
Sami,
five kids. And I think his grandmother lives with them. Okay. I think there's an older person in the house too. And just to reset, like Roman didn't participate in WrestleMania because he had worries about his own health and his family's health. And that's why Braun Strowman was in the match with Bill Goldberg. Yeah. Cause that's something that WWE never explained, that Hunter said, oh no, you'll find out why this has happened. We have a compelling story. You didn't explain it.
Now, Sami Zayn, on the other hand, was upset about, you know, losing his Intercontinental title. Looking back on it, you know, those guys were spearheading this operation, right? I mean, not an operation, but spearheading this. They don't want to be there. It's a mess this week, Jimmy. I know Meltzer's wrote some stuff about it, but it's what everyone's talking about. And, you know, social injustice, whatever, you name it. A lot of it's happening in wrestling right now, and it's taken away from the storylines inside the ring.
Yeah, so I think that's part of it. Like, I know that when the COVID-19, when news got out that there could be as many as 30 WWE employees who have COVID-19, and Kayla Braxton tweeted out that she got it for the second time, and that was the person who tested positive back March 17th, I believe it was.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, this was, I had alluded to it because I had heard it. So it broke on a Saturday. I knew it the Sunday before, but I didn't want to say the name because nobody else was reporting it. And it's also like, that's the outlier. And I didn't want to be the person to put that name out there. I respected the, I guess in news media, there's some debate as to HIPAA laws and things like that. I didn't want to even touch that. So Kayla Braxton tweeted out that she's gotten it twice. You can get it twice. The text that I got relating to that was, just because Florida's open doesn't mean you can just go out and party like a rock star. And I think there's a feeling that this is what happened, was Florida opened up, and it was, the story that I was told is that there were a bunch of wrestlers who were out partying, and thus it got back to them and it spread. And so, to your point, Roman and Sammy probably knew about Kayla. And so they decided, you know what, we're going home. Because now you look back at, Renee Young tweeted out that she tested positive for COVID, and she tested positive on a private test. The WWE test was negative.
Wow.
And so part of the reason why you didn't see AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan and some other participants on SmackDown, even though they were promoted on SmackDown, was, I think, because they were in the ring with Renee Young before her test result came out. So, in other words, she tested negative under WWE, but tested positive privately. So she could have had the virus and spread it to everybody or some people who were in close contact with her. That's just a theory. I don't know. I'm not saying that that happened, but that's a theory that is out there. Is that you have, I think Jamie Noble and Adam Pearce were both working programs with different people. Like, Sheamus was supposed to be on SmackDown. He didn't appear. So now, because WWE is being quiet about who has it, who doesn't, they won't let people tweet about who has it and who doesn't, yeah, or they're shaming you if you do, is because they don't want people to know about the outbreak. So they had a mask thing, right? Where Meltzer and it might have just been Dave and Brian Alvarez on the Observer website were screaming about how masks are looked down upon. I talked to multiple performers this week about the mask thing. They're told to wear it backstage. They're told to wear it everywhere.
Wow.
They would prefer it not to be on camera, but because of the visual, the television look. But the performers that I talked to were like, nope, we have to have a mask on unless we're doing something on camera.
And then there was someone in the audience on SmackDown. I believe only one person had a mask on in the audience, and it was right up in front.
Yeah. So this week at tapings, I think for TV purposes, I don't know this specifically, but my guess is, if you want to wear a mask, you're okay. You just have to have some sort of WWE gimmick on it. I think, and everybody in that crowd was a trainee or a student or somebody of the like. They weren't letting friends and family in again.
And just getting back to your theory, Renee Young supposedly came out, and WWE was upset with her, but not to mention who she's married to was pulled off of AEW as well.
So I had a theory that it was quickly debunked, that once I found out that Renee's test was privately turned up positive, my theory of, well, Renee Young was flunked on the WWE test so that Jon Moxley couldn't appear on AEW. And the person who I asked this to was like, they're not that dark where they would do that. And I said, have you seen this company in the last 40 years? They do some weird stuff. I could see them doing that because Renee Young has John Moxley on her health insurance. So if John Moxley gets hurt, WWE has to pay for the injury.
It's wild.
Isn't it wild?
And there's others too, right? I mean, you know,
John Moxley, by the way, was very transparent. He told Tony Khan. So the report is that Renee Young got her test like Tuesday night or something like that. It was either Monday night or Tuesday night. And John Moxley called up Tony Khan and was like, look, Renee, his wife, just tested positive. What do you want me to do? And they were like, oh, we'll go to a hotel and quarantine. And he's like, well, I don't want to leave my wife home sick. So I don't know. Renee also teased that she's got an announcement coming up. And I wonder if her contract is up. And I wonder if she's stepping away. Because they just canceled, WWE and Fox just canceled Backstage. I
mentioned Backstage in a little bit to you. And that obviously brings up the future of CM Punk. But just sticking with this for a minute, though.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned what WWE's done over the last 40 years. And now with allegations coming out, we've seen wrestlers lose their jobs, get released. There's
a wrestler, and I'm not at I know who it is, or I think I know who it is, who was part of these allegations, and he's not going to get a contract with WWE now. And there was one that was going to be on the table for him, but it got pulled.
But it mentioned targets, bigger targets.
There are stories that I have heard privately that go very high up the ladder, and if they get out there, there's going to be rumbles. But I mean, if you believe Dark Side of the Ring, Vince McMahon walked into a police department and handed them all a briefcase and covered up the Jimmy Snuka murder.
Yep.
So is money talking? Is money talking in this instance? Because here's what happened, Joe. Do you remember China was on Toucher and Rich a few years ago?
Yep.
She made an accusation at Hunter, and I don't remember it ever being addressed.
Never.
Until that was
it.
And so now if that comes back up, now what? Is Hunter gone? Is Hunter canceled? Or, the Matt Riddle thing. So Matt Riddle gets accused of allegations.
Introduced SmackDown.
And he's being introduced on SmackDown. And so depending on the reporting, WWE has been aware of this for a year. So if they've been aware of this for a year, then they must feel comfortable enough with putting Riddle on TV, having him beat AJ Styles. And then he was part of the thank you Undertaker chant. And supposedly he's going to get a match with AJ Styles at the next pay-per-view. Or they're going to hold it off for SummerSlam.
Interesting there. Pritchard wrote that in. You can't have the kid losing in his first match. I was curious if they were going to have him out there. And we're seeing things left and right now, Jimmy, about what's happening.
Bruce is so inconsistent. This is a little side tangent. Bruce is so inconsistent because, we can have Matt Riddle come in and win a match, but you can't have the Radicals come in and win their matches. They have to lose all their matches because then it creates a different story. It's inconsistent with the moment. Bruce and Vince are kind of one and the same. Bruce will fight for different things, but at the end of the day, it's Vince. And, Matt Riddle could be a star. He's got ambitions, but I think he goes about some things the wrong way. And depending on where these allegations end up, he'll be a lot of hype and he'll be a lot of sizzle and no steak.
Mm-hmm. And the bro aspect of it and the weed guy or whatever, I think it can get over. I think it got over in NXT. The fact that he's a former fighting champion as well. I think that can go a long way, but at the same time, he could, as much as they push him, he can get buried.
It's interesting because I would ask you, Joe, what hasn't gotten over in NXT?
Ooh.
I would say AOP.
is the second round of Finn Balor getting over?
Yeah, people love Finn Balor.
Okay. Yeah, because the Ascension got over, right?
The Ascension got over. They were the longest reigning NXT tag team champions.
Good point. Who hasn't gotten over?
So who hasn't? It's AOP, I think.
And the Paul Ellering thing, and then they kicked him to the curb.
I think fans didn't like Baron Corbin either, by the way.
Yeah.
Except when he won the WrestleMania Battle Royal in Dallas, and it's like, oh, NXT, NXT. You guys hated Baron Corbin for the longest time. Shut up. You guys still don't know what to do with Baron Corbin.
Hey, you mentioned something about records or whatever. I know in your notes, like, you wanted to get into MJF, but I just want to mention something about this kid.
Sure.
I like how when he faces Billy, formerly Billy Gunn.
He being MJF.
Yes, MJF. And, like, does the suck it when he kicks him out of the casino battle royal. Or, like, you know, just he makes mention of things that we're aware of, right? About some of these characters. You know, he's gone at Colt Cabana before. Like, he's gone at it. So he's not afraid to say what he wants. And he's got this Warlow guy that I brought up months ago to you guys. And now he's in the big picture now. He's starting to become a character, and hopefully we'll see him wrestle a little bit more. But at some point, like, this is going to be the guy they're going to ride at AEW, right? The guy that they built themselves?
Of course. Of course. And that'll be somebody else for Jon Moxley to beat, I assume, because Jon Moxley's being all these monsters. But the point with MJF is they're quietly building. I shouldn't say quietly. They are slow playing MJF for the world title, and they should. He's unbeaten in singles competition, to the best of my knowledge. I think he's 9-0 in singles competition. And I think his only losses are either tag team matches where he wasn't pinned. And if he was pinned, and I'm wrong, I'm sorry. But lost a casino battle royal to Adam Page, lost a four-way at Fyter Fest to Adam Page. But he's got a nice little singles win-loss record, unbeaten. And if wins and losses matter, then the question is, when do you put MJF into the AEW World Championship matches? And I wouldn't do it just yet. I almost think that here, everybody, get your drink ready, because I'm about to take a shot at Cody.
Let's go. Cody shot.
How does Cody get his win back on MJF from the February pay-per-view? Well, MJF is undefeated. MJF needs to go for a title. They don't want to put him in there with Jon Moxley. So he goes for Cody's TNT title. And Cody beats him and hands MJF his first loss. And it's like, oh, well, he's got to lose to somebody, so why not Cody? There you go. There's your Cody shot. So you all can drink now.
You need like a buzzer for that or something.
It's funny because we just passed the anniversary of Cody winning the Ring of Honor Championship, and one of the cooler moments was being there. I was there with Riley, and it happened in Lowell. And so saw it, had the footage of it, put it out there. Cody liked the tweet. Thank you, Cody, because Cody likes everything and searches his name and all that stuff. Even though I tagged him in the tweet. But it wasn't a year later. It was probably Cody had a match with Ilya Markopoulos in Chaotic, and it was title for title. And after the show, Cody signed a bunch of pictures. So I have a photo of Cody holding the belt and crying with the Ring of Honor title. And, you know, he signed it, and it was very nice and cordial. And again, Cody's always been good to me, but I feel like I now have to take a shot at Cody every podcast so people can drink. So
I like it, though. Hey, how about that press conference?
The press conference was good. And that was the highest. And we were talking about ratings earlier. That was the highest rated segment for AEW, was the press conference. And do you think Jake Hager is a real threat?
They built him up already to be. Right. I do.
Even though he lost to Moxley a few months ago. Yeah. I don't know. We've been in this pandemic for so long. Weeks feel like months, and months feel like years.
Yeah, I think he can still get over it. When they have the Inner Circle out there, he's still one of the, you know, most feared guys. You know, the Stadium Stampede, you know, he did very well. Yeah, the more I watch them, I think there's something there. But I also think it's Inner Circle type stuff. You know, I think whatever they, whoever, hey, listen, if they wanted to, you know, replace Sammy for a couple of weeks and then put in somebody else, it would work, right? Maybe that's what the Dark Order is trying to do with Colt Cabana. I don't know. But whatever they do, at least in AEW, with factions or whatever, everybody works. Everyone gets over. So, I don't know. I wouldn't mind maybe someone else coming into the fold there, and maybe Jericho tries to help those guys get over as well. I don't know who it is. I don't know. What's the perfect 10 guy? Now he's got his glove, right? I don't know.
Hunt Spears, yeah.
I don't know if that's what it is, but I think anyone in that crew, I think, would get over.
Well, so an interesting little detail about the Inner Circle is, to my knowledge, they haven't had like an infighting incident yet. So like when that comes, that'll be big and that'll be important. But they've lost matches. They lost the Stadium Stampede and some other matches, but they've generally been cohesive as a unit, wins or losses, which I think is a good detail to keep going. In the same way, like the New Day, they haven't broken up in 6 years, and that's an eternity in wrestling. And so I find that as a good thing, as a really good thing, that the Inner Circle is kind of keeping their continuity together. You know, the Jake Hager, Cody, is probably going to be the main event of Fyter Fest, which is the next 2 weeks of AEW programming, which is why WWE is doing the Great American Bash, which I think we'll detail a little bit later on. But Fyter Fest, this was supposed to be an overseas show. The show for AEW, it's loaded, week one and two. Any takeaways outside of the Cody, Cody Jake Hager match, Joe?
Not really, right? I mean, was there anything that, you know, the Orange Cassidy stuff I'm still interested in. I still think there's something there. I'd like the FTR in what they're doing. I mean, at some point, right, there's got to be some build with them and the Young Bucks.
Yeah.
It's just going to happen at some point. But I think they need to continue to introduce new characters to me. You know, they there was a woman they introduced for me the other day, Anna something, whatever. But I didn't know her. And when I saw her, I was like, hey, this is somebody new. I think they need to continue to introduce new characters and continue to build their own. Because I think that's the one thing in general with AEW is, oh, another guy that they took from somewhere else that they brought in. But the one thing I'm noticing is they're using a lot of these guys to put people over. I mean, the Young Bucks, their record's not great, but they're helping putting people over. You know, I like the, what is it, SCU? Like, I like these type teams. I think the tag team division's pretty good overall. We haven't seen Darby Allin in a bit. I wonder if he got hurt.
He is under... I feel like he's suspended.
Oh wow. Yeah, because he did maybe they wrote him off because he got hurt.
Suspended for something.
Interesting.
I may have just said something I shouldn't have said, but
no. This is all speculation here. We're just speculating here on the show. But he has been written off as far as I can tell. But I do think they need to continue to develop characters. That's the one thing. And I like what Matt Hardy's been bringing to the table. I think he's with the program. Hey, anything you guys need me to do, I'm going to do it. You know, he on the announced team, I think he was good. I like what he's brought to the table so far. And I like watching AEW live. It's one thing I like doing week in and week out.
I may have said something I shouldn't have, but...
We can delete it.
Yeah. Nope. There it is. Darby Allin is part of the speaking out movement.
Boom. There we go.
Allocate. Yep. Okay. So I didn't say something I shouldn't have said.
Oh, we know that Sammy was. I didn't see the Darby stuff. And again, there's probably so much going on, Jimmy.
There's so much of it. And it's all terrible. It's all terrible. And it's personally affected me because I know some of these people and it's not great.
I think this show is catered on what happens inside the ring and storylines and, you know, what could come next or things of that degree. And when it's stuff that's not about wrestling, it's tough to talk about, right? I mean, we want to see these guys in the ring, but at the same time, you can't say stupid stuff. If somebody's sick,
and you can't do stupid stuff. You have to use some sort of common sense.
Yep. And you need to, you know, pay the piper, right? If you do something or say something and you get caught, you got to pay the piper. That's what's happening with some of these guys here. But the COVID stuff, that's real. But I think we've known it's real for a while. It's just now it's been publicly out there that they need to get a handle on a little bit better than they've been doing.
Yeah, and Kevin Owens, as we've been recording this, put out a video saying that his mother-in-law passed away because of COVID-19. So that
TV too, yeah.
That I think can better explain why he's been off and on TV as we've gone on here, because he's been dealing with that, which is unfortunate. It's really unfortunate. So it's just a general thought on Fyter Fest. I think it'll be a good 2 weeks of shows. I don't anticipate anything major happening. I think all the champions retain. There'll probably be a storyline thing. I think it'll just be a good 2 weeks of wrestling. And I think that's kind of the important thing that AEW is going to do. Instead of it being a Saturday night show for Bleacher Report, it'll be across their TV show, which I think is okay.
How do you feel about the tag team champion? Like, at some point, is Omega and Paige going to get knocked off? And do you think you could be
best friends? I think so. I just don't think it's against best friends.
Yeah.
I like the dynamic because we're waiting for the Adam Page turn. And I think it also for now keeps, I think for now it keeps Kenny Omega fresh until they want to put him in the main event picture. Because I think that there's a return match with Chris Jericho. And there's a title return match with Jon Moxley, because Jon Moxley beat Kenny Omega in the non-sanctioned match. So there's value in Kenny Omega versus Jon Moxley again.
Mm. And what happens with Brian Cage? Because I thought he looked good, man. And I thought they built him well. You bring Taz out there. I thought the same for Lance Archer. I just don't feel like both guys, I don't want to call it buried, but both guys are going to see a main event and lose to Moxley, and then what?
Yeah, I think Cage was brought in to be a monster for Jon Moxley to kill. Tony Khan said on the AEW podcast that he's a big fan of Brian Cage and that he actually signed him back in January and kept it quiet, which, again, like, the greatness of AEW keeping these signings quiet, like, it's awesome. So I'm not sure where Brian Cage goes after Jon Moxley, because I don't anticipate Brian Cage winning the world title from Jon Moxley unless Moxley just is so banged up. But I feel like Tony Khan loves Jon Moxley, and there's still more money to be drawn with Jon Moxley. But Taz managing is great. Taz is so good. I've loved Taz's work. His ECW work is just tremendous. So I'm glad that he's in a managerial spot with somebody who can just go out there and destroy. And that finisher, the old Scott Steiner screwdriver finish, is tremendous. It's not safe at all, but it's tremendous. So Brian Cage has a lot of positives going for him. I don't see him beating Jon Moxley.
Yeah, me either. But again, we probably will never see it unless someone turns. But Cage Archer, man, that'd be something I'd love to watch.
Yeah, that'd be good stuff.
Sign me up for that.
That would be good stuff. That would be really good stuff. Did you have something on Colt Cabana you wanted to talk about?
Yeah. And I kind of got lost in the storyline. I know they sent them a letter. They wanted them to join. He's actually going to be at Fyter Fest with the Dark Order. I've liked his work. Now, forgive me, I haven't always watched Colt Cabana. I know his relationship with CM Punk. I actually met him a couple of years ago at WrestleCon. I liked his match against Jericho. I thought he showed talent. He showed athletic ability. Showed that he was a pro more than anything. He's gotten over for me. I don't know. There's something about him. And again, the name. But now him going to Dark Order, is that to try to beef up the Dark Order a little bit based off not knowing who some of the faces are?
I think it's to create a story for Colt and to put him in some type of a program. Because I feel like AEW generally doesn't. They try to have enough stories to continue stuff so that not every match is just a cold match. So Colt Cabana, is he going to join Dark Order? Is there some promos that can be out of this? Because for the most part, Colt has been a comedy wrestler. There have been instances where he's been a very serious wrestler. I think he's a former NWA champion. I think when I was in Dallas, did you go to Dallas
for
WrestleMania?
Not.
No. Colt went, put a sign on his merch table, and he said, I'll be back around like 3 o'clock. Busy will be back at 3 o'clock or something like that. He goes upstairs. He makes his surprise appearance at the Ring of Honor show, which was upstairs. And he goes in there and he beats Jay Lethal. And now he's a main eventer for Ring of Honor doing a serious program. But Colt's main work has been promos and comedy wrestling. But he has that ability to turn on the seriousness. So maybe this is just showing a different side of Colt Cabana. Because athletically, he's gifted as anybody else.
Yeah, that's a good point there is, hey, we already know what he can do on one side of it. So let's see what he can do and maybe give the Dark Order a little bit more of a push.
Yeah, and it gives Brody Lee something to do. That's interesting because both those guys. I was at, Joe, as we found out, Brody Lee can actually talk.
He can actually talk. He can do well, and I don't know. I mean, I know we could stare into his eyes, right? I mean, hey, he's out of a white T-shirt. And now he's in those jeans and that bandana in his back pocket. So wearing that suit. Guy looks essential all of a sudden. Looks like he's a chairman, maybe of some sort. The chairman of the Dark Order, possibly.
The chairman of the Dark Order. So, Joe, this is the point where I ask, do you want to do match of the week or do you want to do the five count?
Let's do match of the week because there's a couple of things out there. I know you have a specific match, but
yep.
I don't. So I just want to throw out some things that happened in history.
Sure.
This week, one for me was the Ric Flair leaving WCW and then eventually going to WWE. And again, you know, he brought Goldie with him. He brought it with him to.
Do you know the story with that?
So this is what I gather. Maybe you can clean it up for me.
Yep.
He was given that belt and brought it to WWF at the time. And they used it. He gave it to Bobby Heenan at first. And he kept saying, you know, this is going to be the new title, whatever. But there ended up being a lawsuit after it, and I believe he got like 30 or 40 grand because at one point it was his title, but he had to give it back to NWA. Long story short, the negotiations with WCW and NWA, he left, came to WWE, won the title, obviously, at the Royal Rumble, and the rest was history for the Nature Boy. But this was the date, 26 years ago today.
So when you were the champion of the National Wrestling Alliance, you had to put a deposit on the belt, the actual belt. So you would write a check to the promoter of the NWA for 25 grand. And that's so that if something happened, you either kept the belt and the NWA kept the money, or you give the belt back, they give you your money back with interest. So WCW, which was part of the NWA, Ric Flair and Jim Herd, who was the Eric Bischoff, the lead booker, vice president of WCW, he and Ric Flair got into an issue, a contract issue.
Yeah. And he wanted them to lose to Lex Luger, and he said he wouldn't do that because he promised it to Sting, I believe, as well.
No, so the promise to Sting would have been 1990 when Sting won at the Great American Bash that year.
Got it. Okay.
So this was a contract dispute. Herd wanted the belt off of Flair. He wanted it on Luger. That is correct. Flair wanted a new contract, and Jim Herd wasn't going to give him a new contract, right? So Jim Herd told Ric Flair, send us back the belt. And Ric Flair said, well, you send me a check for 25 grand plus interest and I'll send you the belt. Herd told him to F off. He said, I'll just send Doug Dillinger, head of security, to get the belt. And Flair and Dillinger are longtime friends. And Flair said the same thing. If you're coming with Dillinger, he better have a check for 25 grand plus interest, and then I'll hand it over. And Jim Herd said, F you, we'll make a new one. right? So Flair kept the belt. And then Flair called Vince and said, hey, I'm ready to come up, and here's the belt. I think there's another story in that before his contract expired or he got fired, Jim Herd said, fly to this town and drop the belt to Wyndham. And Flair said, well, you better have the check with my money as well. And so the idea is that the NWA title had a deposit attached to it, and Jim Herd wanted to change Ric Flair totally. Yep. And like, don't change Ric Flair. Don't change Ric Flair. You don't need to have him have an earring or call him Spartacus or anything like that. It's Ric Flair, right? It's Ric Flair. It's one of the greatest performers of our lifetime. Mm-hmm. So Lex Luger ends up beating Barry Windham in a cage. And the whole time the crowd is, it was Bash 92. Or was it Bash 91? It was Bash 91 because Ric Flair won the world title in 92, right? Because he won the 92 Royal Rumble.
Royal Rumble, yep.
So if you watch that, the Baltimore arena is just chanting, we want Flair, we want Flair. And they're doing it the entire night. And it's one of the early times where a crowd has taken over a pay-per-view main event. Mm-hmm. And now we see it all the time.
One other thing I just wanted to mention, 18 years ago today, Chris Jericho signed with WWE. And also, 1 year ago today was the debut episode of AEW Dynamite. So that's what we have for history. And I know you have some pretty good
AEW Dynamite debuted in September.
Was it September?
October?
I found this today. All right.
Well, was there Fighter Fest?
Maybe that
was it. AEW Fighter Fest. Yeah. That might be what it was.
That's why you guys are the experts here.
I'm far from an expert. But
I know you had something on a couple other anniversaries today.
So June 27th was the CM Punk pipe bomb promo. And June 28th was Undertaker throwing Mankind off Hell in a Cell, that King of the Ring. Also, Kane won the world title at that King of the Ring. My match of the week is Undertaker related. It happened July 1st of 2002. It was Jeff Hardy challenging Undertaker for the Undisputed WWE Championship in a ladder match. And what Undertaker did and was doing in this kind of title run was he made Jeff Hardy in this match. He made Jeff Hardy look like $1 million on this match. And this is the famous Jeff Hardy has his hand on the championship multiple times, and JR famously screams, make yourself famous. And that was following Jeff Hardy just crushing Undertaker with a chair shot to the head. Just, it's one of those matches I think you should go back and watch. It's good. It's worth it. It's Undertaker really giving the proverbial rub to Jeff Hardy. Joe Murray, what do you have for a five count for us?
All right, five counts. So I'm going to throw five things at you. Normally it's the rally round, but when I'm in, it's the five count. So Tessa Blanchard, remember that name?
I do. I buried her back in January on a podcast.
Once in NXT, gone to Impact, the champion, I believe 159 days, released, controversial. WWE, of course, is interested. Your thoughts?
So she's 24. She'll have a chance, but once the lockdown happened, she wasn't coming back to drop the Impact title. Her contract, I guess, is up July 1st. And so Impact deserves a little bit of blame here for promoting her for a match after her contract date. But there were issues with her getting out of Mexico, because that's where her and her fiance live, getting out and getting back in. So she was locked down for COVID. Tully works for AEW, so that seems kind of logical, but I don't know that she's really loved by upper management in AEW. And based on her issues back in January, which are available in the archives of Wrestling Inside the Ropes, I'm not sure that she's a fit there. WWE had her. I think she was in four matches in WWE. I think she went 0-4. I think she lost to Kairi Sane in the Mae Young Classic. I think she lost to Alexa Bliss. I think she lost to Nia Jax, and I think Carmella tapped her out. So she did business that round when she was asked to. And that's kind of the biggest thing. Is Tessa Blanchard coming in to do business, or is she just going there to do her own thing? And when it comes time to actually do business, she won't do business. So there's an attitude concern with her. But fabulous talent. She's one of the premier women's workers in the world, but she's got an attitude, and she's 24. And if WWE is about cleaning up the culture in that locker room, she doesn't fit there. But she doesn't fit in. Attitude, talent-wise, perfect fit anywhere. Attitude-wise, I have questions. Where does she end up? If you're asking me for a prediction, I think she ends up in AEW.
I think it's the best spot for her. If she goes back to WWE, they could bury her and she could be done. That's just one man's opinion.
That's okay.
But moving on with the five count, the Great American Bash returns to NXT. How do you feel about WWE using some of these former, like, In Your House, Great American Bash? And I know we're going to have one good match here, Adam Cole take on Keith Lee, but how do you feel about them just bringing back some of these trademarks?
I think it's all marketing. I think AEW doing Fighter Fest and AEW and NXT being competition, I think that's the only reason why. It's fun to use the name, and people will be like, oh, okay, Great American Bash. I recognize that name, but I think it's just marketing. That's all it is. It's just marketing. I wish it was more exciting than that, but if it was the true Great American Bash, then here come the War Games, here come the big stadiums. Like that summer tour with the National Wrestling Alliance and WCW, like that's when the Great American Bash meant something, because that was the whole point of the Great American Bash, was it was a tour of wrestling across America during the summer months.
WWE Backstage has been canceled. I liked the show. I liked, you know, what Renee Young brought to the table, and guests like Mark Henry and Booker T and, of course, CM Punk. What does the cancellation of Backstage mean for the future of CM Punk and WWE?
So CM Punk's contract is with Fox. So if they buy out the contract, CM Punk gets his money. I think the show is going to come back at some point. Maybe it's a different style or a different look. But I think CM Punk's going to get all his money. I don't get the vibe that CM Punk wants to wrestle. I think he's done. I think unless you promised him a WrestleMania main event, I don't even know if that would do it. But CM Punk seems kind of comfortable in what he has, and he can be an analyst, and he can be a really good analyst, and he can do UFC. But Punk has been the highlight of that show, that Backstage show. His conversations with Daniel Bryan and Ricky Steamboat and Bret Hart have just been excellent. And I wonder if Fox canceling it kind of has to do with Paige and the Knight family allegations during the speaking up movement. But CM Punk is an asset to any company that he signs on, but I think he'll get his money from Fox, and maybe if they bring back a different version of that WWE show, he'll be back on it.
Any chance Fox could have him as a commentator?
I mean, that would mean he'd have to go to Florida, and he'd have to replace Corey Graves.
He couldn't Zoom in or anything like that?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't see that.
I'd like to see him a part of something once a week with WWE.
So I said this a few weeks ago. I think CM Punk should be on the WWE creative team.
Be smart.
He said for the longest time, WWE and Vince McMahon doesn't know their audience anymore. So put CM Punk on the creative team.
He constantly criticizes them, right? And they let him do it.
Yep. So CM Punk, here's the pencil. Here's the eraser. Go do your thing and give him 6 months and see what happens. That won't happen, but.
Hey, you never know, man. So WWE, you never know. Could be desperate times or desperate measures. Two more here, Jimmy. Two layups. The Rock gave his goat this week. He said Downtown Bruno, Harvey Wimpleman. Ha ha ha. He then said Stone Cold. So I ask you, who is your goat?
It's Hulk Hogan. It's Hulk Hogan is the reason I got into wrestling. That's the reason why I'm a fan. He was a good guy. He was the best good guy when he was asked to be the good guy. And he was the best bad guy when he was asked to be the bad guy. I don't think anybody drew more money and for on both sides of the ledger than Hulk Hogan did. And I think that when it comes to wrestling, if you're looking at wrestling from the business side, it's Hulk Hogan. You know, I would send a little bit off the grid to Bobby the Brain Heenan. And he managed world champions. He managed like a wrestler. He wrestled like a manager. He was great in the broadcast booth. And you put somebody with Bobby Heenan, and it was an immediate threat for Hulk Hogan's title. Or, you know, he helped Rick Rude beat the Ultimate Warrior for the Intercontinental title. His work in WCW wasn't that great, but his WWF work and his AWA work were great. So Hulk Hogan is probably the greatest of all time. If you want to say Ric Flair, no objections on my end, but Hulk Hogan was the top money drawing attraction on both the good guy side and the bad guy side in different eras of wrestling. Joe, who's yours?
It's Hulk Hogan, but here's why. I didn't know who Ric Flair was until Hulk Hogan. It took me to one day be bored and check out what's happening on WCW to find out what was happening there. But I will say this, though. Another reason why he's the GOAT, Hulk Hogan, forget about drawing money, whatever. I think he was what was best for the business and what was worst for the business. And what I mean by that is how many people got buried. Dude, I just listened to the Earthquake podcast recently. I thought it was great, right? But, like, yeah. Remember that storyline? Him, like, the I know he was going to go do movies or whatever, but, like, just Hogan was bad for the business as well. Wouldn't help people over and needed a career change. And the NWO is what put asses back in the seats again. It was the fact that he did that. Yeah. I mean, we could talk about who's the GOAT all day and we'll all have different answers, but just my answer on Hogan is he both was good and bad for the business. And overall, it was very good for the business.
Ric Flair, by the way, feels the same way. Because yeah. Hogan went to WCW and just especially when he turned into a villain, just buried everybody. So you're not alone in feeling that way.
Yep. Finally, the greatest gimmick in wrestling history is The Undertaker. There's no doubt that he is the greatest gimmick wrestler ever. Undertaker was made. I ask you this. And I'm not going to say Rick, like some people have given me other names. So Ric Flair has been a name. Okay. But what is the next greatest gimmick that WWE has ever come up with? Let's use WWE for in particular here.
Ted DiBiase, the $1 million man. Everybody's got a price. The laugh was great. DiBiase could do any type of match you needed. His promos were great. This was Vince McMahon living through Ted DiBiase. It's the $1 million man.
I think Kane was a really good gimmick. Yep. Is it one of the best ever? Maybe not.
It's a Vince McMahon creation.
Yep, like they've tried. But think about that. I love people to chat in during the week on that one. And greatest Mankind? Gimmick of all time. Mankind, very good. Was a champion, right? And obviously had the faces of Foley later on. That's a great gimmick. It really is. And WWE created it. And I feel like in general, if WWE didn't make it, you're not getting over.
Goldust?
Goldust is very good gimmick. Very good. The problem is, I think Goldust won some titles. I don't know if WWE...
multiple time Intercontinental champion.
And I don't know if... Did DiBiase?
DiBiase was only a tag team champion. And Joe Murray, I would tell... and Joe Murray, I would tell you... So this is interesting. So Ted DiBiase buys Andre the Giant from Bobby Heenan.
Yep.
Andre wins the title, surrenders the world tag team title to Ted DiBiase. Yes, that's what Andre said. So Ted DiBiase essentially buys the world title.
Yep.
He wrestles in Boston Garden and is announced as WWF champion. Mm-hmm. Jack Tunney eventually takes the title away from him, and they do the tournament that Randy Savage beats DiBiase in the finals for. So fast forward to it was either the night that the WWE 24/7 title debuted or it was the week after it debuted. Medusa is about to drop the title in the trash. Ted DiBiase comes out and buys the title from her. That is a valid transaction. So retroactively, Ted DiBiase has to be a former WWF champion, does he not?
Retroactive.
Right?
It was announced.
So Ted DiBiase no longer is one of the great wrestlers of all time, never to be the world champion.
Would you consider Edge a gimmick?
Edge was awesome. The Brood is a great gimmick.
Yeah.
Crow Sting?
Great gimmick. Great gimmick.
Broken Matt Hardy.
Very good. Very good. Very good.
You want some bad gimmicks?
Okay.
Beaver Cleavage.
Not good.
Anything Glenn Jacobs did before Kane.
Yep. What about the guy like Glacier wasn't good?
Glacier. Yep.
That was a bad
fake
one.
Fake Diesel and Fake Razor.
What about the guy who tried to run in and he fell? Put the helmet
Shockmaster.
Back on. Shockmaster. Bad. Giant Gonzalez.
Giant Gonzalez. Naked Midian.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember Kerwin White?
Yep.
Chavo Guerrero.
Those are bad ones, man.
Do you remember who his caddy was?
No, I don't.
Dolph Ziggler. Dolph Ziggler was Chavo Guerrero's caddy under the name Kerwin White.
Interesting.
Mantar. Do you remember Mantar?
Met Mantar in New York 2 years ago.
And, of course, my favorite, Bastion Booger, because, as Bobby Heenan would say, Booger is my pick.
Ooh, I like it. That's it. That's all I got for you. That's all I got for you, big guy.
All right, then. Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Joe Murray is part of the Over Under podcast and the Just Sitting Here podcast. He is on Twitter at Joey Murr. Thank you for helping out. We close this week. We want to send our thoughts and prayers to Mike and his family at this time. His father passed away. Mr. James D. Riley passed away peacefully, surrounded by his family on June 25th. If you would like to make a donation in lieu of flowers in Mr. Riley's name, they can be made to St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital, which is 261 Danny Thomas Place in Memphis, Tennessee, 38105, or to 100 Club of Massachusetts, which is 17 Gloucester Street in Boston, Massachusetts, and the zip code is 02115. So we're thinking of Mike. Joe, thank you for pinch hitting this week and helping out on the podcast. And we will talk to you next week. Mike and I are planning to talk to you next week and do a show dedicated to The Undertaker.
Looking for hope? House of Possibilities offers children and adults with disabilities a path to greater independence. From social to recreational programs to overnight respite and career and community access opportunities, House of Possibilities is changing the way people see disabilities and their program participants see themselves. Visit houseofpossibilities.org to learn more or to support their work. That's houseofpossibilities.org. House of Possibilities. See what belonging can do.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every single game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. It's guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Stewart and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Hey there, Boston. This is Noah Barney from North Attleboro. This year, I will be running not just one marathon, but I'm attempting to complete all six World Major Marathons. And I'm proud to run the 2024 Boston Marathon to support Boston Scores, an amazing nonprofit that uses soccer and poetry to inspire and empower youth. As a former collegiate soccer player, I am honored to be part of the Boston Scores Marathon team and support free after-school and summer learning programs for 1,500 local students each year. Learn more and support my run today at Boston Scores.org/Noah.